Hello.
Ray,
Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly decently, I think.
Good.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes.
That's fantastic.
Good.
You do know this is now the intro to the Sideshow.
Excellent.
Yeah. Big budget productions, Ray.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know how it rolls. Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. We have bird song. I'm in the lane and we have bird song, so that's all good.
Okay, well, you just wait there with the bird song. I'll press this button and we'll play the intro jingle now.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
You are very welcome to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. This one, for me, is a little bit of a treat. My guest on today's show is a fellow garden designer. She is an absolute lady, a total legend. I've been a big fan from afar. I've admired her work, and more so, I should add, how she goes about doing that. Ray Wilkinson, you are very welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast. How are you?
Oh, very well, and thank you very much for having me on the show. Very, very nice to be asked, and lovely to talk to you, Peter.
You too, my dear. Whereabouts were you today, Ray, that took you so long to get on the show?
Ah, so what? I was in Cornwall, actually. We went to Cornwall for a holiday, but I also went to see Ben Barrell, who's making the sculptural seats for my Chatsworth show garden, which was really exciting. So kind of work and holiday mixed together. Which was really nice.
I should apologise to our listeners. Ray's line is a little bit coming and going. We have trialled it in the household, but that was also coming and going. So she is now down a laneway on a battery pack, boosting her telephone in order to be able to talk to us. It is the best we can literally do. And believe me, we have tried absolutely everything. And there you have it.
Apologies.
You're perfectly fine, Ray. But in true Peter style, when I went to Blarney Castle camping, and then gave a garden talk on the Saturday, I'm delighted to see that you're following in my footsteps. Let's skip on past that, Ray, for just a second, because we were talking off air about your next upcoming garden. One or two of the subjects that we hit on, I think it's fair to say, when I said to you the little people running around in my head telling me, no, Peter, don't pay attention to logic nor your accountant, go and do these things that will quench their thirst, that will make them smile, you empathized with me. What's the next garden, Ray, and what is the status on that?
So I'm doing a mindfulness garden at RHS Chatsworth Flower Show this year, and I entered for this category because it's something that interests me very much, and I've designed a biophilic meditation space, which was something that just it came to me because all these subjects interest me a great deal, and I was very lucky to be accepted, which is fantastic, and I'm really excited about doing this, and it's a good category because it's a new category. It's got a great subject, and the RHS are providing some funding for these gardens. But you know, show gardens are expensive, as we know, and I've been seeking out funding from the right kind of organisations for the last couple of months or more, and that's proved a long, painful process, and so far fruitless, unfortunately. So I found a relocation for the garden, but I am looking at the moment at paying for quite a lot of the build myself. So it's frustrating not to be able to involve somebody in that, really.
It's a funny one, because for those who were listening to myself and Ed Burnham speak about the perennial garden at RHS Cardiff, we, I have to say, were very much the freak. We did not have to ask a whole lot. We did not have to look very far. We weren't gifted money or a bursary, to put a finer name on that. We were, however, gifted the alternate to that, which is the things you don't have to spend money on.
Which we do have as well. We have sponsorship on materials and features, which is fantastic. Because that really helps, doesn't it?
It's a tough one though, Ray. I'll still say it to anybody who's ever gone and done a show card, whether you win medal or you don't win medal, the ability to piece together, to be the bus conductor, if you'll allow me say it that way, of a show garden as versus the title that we are given, which is a garden designer, it is very much a massive accomplishment and that most people don't get to hear about. They say, well, I like that garden or I don't like that garden, but the behind the scenes of it is a long
involved complex process. Yes, very much so.
And trying to, I suppose, give a return on that. How long have you been working on this one, Ray? Has it been a full year?
No, so I literally put my submission in over Christmas on a whim, and it was, the category had come up and I'd seen it and it sparked my interest, and I guess unconsciously I'd been thinking about it a little bit, and then I just over Christmas thought, I just really want to create a meditation space and as a garden, because I've done some meditation outside. I've done some forest bathing meditation, and it's been so powerful and so wonderful. I thought this is a really good kind of message and a good subject matter. So it was a real win, in all honesty. And I put that design together in a sort of rush of creativity that was very fast. And then since then, I've just been kind of working out the detail, and it's come together really nicely in terms of, you know, people wanting to help sponsor features and materials and to kind of get on board with what I'm doing. And also, you know, finding a good contractor, which is really important, someone that you get on with and you've seen what they do, you know that they can do a show garden, and that you're going to get on okay when you're doing it, because it is intense. So all of that's come together really well. But I have, you know, I've gone through this process of trying to get an organisation involved too, just to benefit the garden and to benefit them as well. And it's got, you know, I've gone through that whole process with a few different organisations now who are all really interested, really on board. And then it comes to the final decision maker who hasn't been involved in that process, just saying, no, we're not putting money into that. So, that's kind of where we are with it. But, you know, everything else is going really well. But if you're actually seeking the funding, it's much harder. Having done the design already.
It's a conversation I had with Andrew Fisher-Tomlin a while ago, and equally Ed Burnham when we were at Cardiff, and Sherry Carmen was also involved in that one. And the question was, how many paper exercises have you done as regards garden designs? And it's not that the garden design is bad. It's more that another decides to pull the plug. This doesn't suit that person's brief. B, you try it again and all of a sudden the money doesn't fit, or it doesn't suit another supplier who's now putting the money in, and it goes around and around and around. And again, I'll go back and say it for anybody who pieces together a garden, medal, bronze, silver, gold, the actual getting there and seeing it come to reality is award and merit enough for me. Let's go back a little bit, Ray, if we can.
Yes.
How long are you, do I call it, operating as a garden designer? Where would people best know you from? Did you go and study? Tell me a little bit more about your horticulture or garden design background.
So I got into gardening really to pay the rent, actually, a long time ago, over 20 years ago now. Gosh, I can't think actually exactly how many years. I did art at university. I did an art degree. I was doing sculpture. I did some environmental work when I left university, and I went and hung out with Johnny Woodford, who was at the time making sculptures for Cleve West for his show gardens, which were just amazing, these really exciting chainsaw sculptures. And I thought, God, I want to do something like this. And I hadn't really thought about that kind of thing being in a garden before that. And I became a landscaper first. I was laying paving to pay the rent, as I say. And then I got involved with some much more interesting work within that, where I was working for designers, and it became more about the plants. And I realized that actually, you know, gardens can be an incredibly creative and beautiful thing, and very much connected to art and, you know, sculpture and you know, even the design process For me, it's very much about being artistic with what you have. So I then ran a soft landscaping company for about 10 years, which was ended up just being all girls, not for any particular reason other than that's kind of just the way it kind of happened. And we were planting and maintaining gardens for designers, in particular a designer called Anthony Paul, who some people may have heard of. And I also worked in the sculpture garden that he operates from as a gardener for a while, the Hannah Pashar Sculpture Garden, which is a really beautiful place I recommend visiting if anyone ever gets there. And then I actually did a garden design diploma with Andrew Wilson about 12 years ago now, probably a bit longer than that even, when he was still teaching at Merris Wood before he set up the London College of Design, which was just fantastic because he was just an inspirational tutor and he filled in all the gaps that I hadn't picked up through my kind of 10 years or so of just working in these gardens for designers. So that was really fantastic. And I've been designing gardens since then and I love it. I absolutely love my job. And obviously running a business has its stresses and you know, the clients aren't always nice, but on the whole, I absolutely love what I do because I get to be really creative with plants and landscapes and various materials and features, and it's just a wonderful job to be able to do. I've done two previous show gardens at Hampton Court. The first one was in 2015, and that was the Healing Urban Garden, which is called the Hug Garden. That was a fantastic experience. I really enjoyed it. I worked with a sculptor on a bench that I designed, and we worked up the design together, and he created it, and that was amazing. And I had a really great contractor for that one. And, you know, all the people, in fact, Cherry Carmen was helping with my planting on that one because we were working with Living Landscapes. And I then worked with a charity called the Abbey Field to do another garden at Hampton Court, which was the following year, and that was called A Breath of Fresh Air, and it was a dementia care garden, and that was a very different experience actually, and very much about the client brief and the fact that the garden was being relocated into a care home setting, and that one was quite a learning curve. And I've since then, I've been involved in lots of show gardens in terms of helping. And I've done last year I did a public space for the RHS at Chelsea, which was really enjoyable because they basically paid me to kind of create they did fund it in terms of materials. So we created a garden that people could actually go and sit on and hang out in, which was really nice because it's so nice at a show like that to see people actually sitting in a garden and having their lunch or their pims and spilling it all over the paving and that kind of thing, and sitting on the plants. And I actually couldn't watch that a lot of the time, people sitting on the plants, but they were enjoying it, you know, and I think that's really lovely to see, you know, crowds of people actually really enjoying a garden that you've created. There's nothing much more lovely than that, is there?
No, and to be fair, there isn't. And I do empathise. There are gardens that I have made for families that I walk away and I now know to take the photograph on the day that it is complete while they're barred from walking into it. And and that is the last time I'll ever see that photograph in that state, how and ever, as my clients sometimes, I say clients, I hate that word personally, but as the people who I build and make gardens for, they do remind me that it's not mine and I should go home and leave them. It's theirs.
I think with private gardens, it's really important to me, it's really important that I never try and take ownership of that garden from the client. It's always their garden. I will be quite firm about what I think is going to work and what's not going to work. And I do take a lot of pride in how that's finished. But I will always feel like it's their garden and I want them to feel like that too. And the bit I like doing is going back 2 or 3 years later to photograph it. But I will always make sure that if I'm going to do that, I'm going to allocate a day or two to actually sorting that garden out, because 9 times out of 10, it hasn't been looked after properly, or, you know, it needs tidying up a bit. It needs the right kind of pruning to be done, or the right kind of weeding to be done, and all the little pots that have appeared to be removed and that kind of thing. So it is tricky. And sometimes you go back to a garden and you think, well, this isn't quite what I intended it to look like, because they haven't really done what I asked them to do with it. So it's a frustrating process, but, you know, some clients get it, and, you know, some gardeners get it. And that's also important. I think when you get, if there's a gardener working for a client, I make absolutely sure that I go and have a dialogue with them and make sure that they're on board and they understand what the vision is and what they need to do with it. Because otherwise, you know, they'll just chop it and hack it maybe and not really think about what you were thinking it should look like.
I'm still reminded of the judges at RHS Cardiff standing on the turf on the edge of the garden and Burnham telling me, don't look.
What were they doing?
Well, they were just standing on the garden testing things out, giving it, and we were saying, well,
poking,
we have to go back and repair that. Ray, meditation, that's one thing. But mindfulness, yeah, in gardens. If you don't mind me saying, and I play devil's advocate here, but yeah, we seem to have come from the 80s of the log roll pandemic, through the decking, through the low maintenance, to a point at which McDonald's were giving away grow your own kits with Happy Meals, which will tell you where that sort of hit a super saturation level. And now we seem to have come to this word mindfulness. Can you explain to me, and also those listening at home, who not everybody would be as aware of it as, let's say, you are, and how does that mindfulness word tie in with your garden to be at Chatsworth 2019?
I'll try and explain the three basic sort of elements that the garden I designed covers. So mindfulness is basically about being and reconnecting with the moment and with yourself and perhaps with your surroundings, or with what you're doing, because in the modern day our minds are very, very scattered. We have a lot of distractions. You know, we have screens, we have various stresses going on constantly, and it's very difficult for our minds to be still or to be in the present moment. And I think a lot of us spend time in the past or in the future in our heads much more than we do in the present moment. And this is, I think, causing a lot of anxiety in people these days. You know, and people are much more aware of mental health and of the effects of anxiety, which is a really good thing, because it's out in the open, people are talking about it, and I've certainly suffered with anxiety and depression myself, and what I've found is that actually gardening has really helped me over the years, but the tool that I've really benefited from in more recent years was actually mindfulness. I did a mindfulness meditation course, and it was the best tool that I've ever been given in terms of just being well and happy and present. So I think it's a powerful tool that can benefit everybody, really. And it could just be about sitting quietly for a moment under a tree. It could just be about focusing on what you're eating while it's in your mouth. It could just be about closing your eyes for a moment and watching your breathing. The meditation side of things, it's something that is also, I think, very helpful and can be very powerful. It's not for everybody. Some people really don't like the idea of it or don't get on with it very well, but it has helped me enormously in being settled, happy, present, level-headed person. So and a lot of people I know have benefited from it as well. What I have also discovered much more recently, the two came together when I did some forest bathing and I spent time outside meditating. And actually something about being in nature while you're having that moment of calm and quiet, it just ramps up the power of it so much, because essentially human beings need to be connected to nature. And that brings me on to the third point, which is biophilia. The biophilia is the idea that we as a species need to be connected to nature, because that's where we come from. We are so removed from it in so much of our daily lives these days, especially within an urban environment, you know, with all the screens we have to deal with. Biophilia is the idea that we create that connection and we create opportunity for it to happen. So there's a lot of biophilic design being introduced into architecture to enable people to have contact with nature, even in an urban environment. What I wanted to kind of bring together was the idea that you could have a meditation space that's outside, that's in a green space, where you are in nature for a moment. The trees are in there as well, because that references the forest bathing element, which is called Shinrin-yoku, which is just about being amongst trees. Shinrin-yoku, it's something probably a lot of people don't know about, and if you say forest bathing, people look at you like you're insane. So it's a Japanese discovery, really, and there's been a lot of research going on in recent years where lots of people have been taken out to forest spaces and monitored in terms of their blood pressure, their heart rate, their general well-being, and even their immune responses and their immunity levels. And what they found is that when people are amongst trees and people are out in the forest, they become so much more well, and their blood pressure will go down. There's been a lot of cancer patients who benefited from just spending time in forests because of the chemicals that are emitted. We are creatures who come from nature, and we, to be connected to nature and to be in amongst it, can only be good for us, I think.
I've got a picture in my head, Ray, of Timothée Advert meets Robinsonian style gardening. For those of you who are unaware, Robinsonian style was the predecessor to biodiversity, which is, in a nutshell, just let your garden go to pot. And that's okay, because there's a brand name on it. And then I've got my mother's words in my ears, which were usually started with Peter rather than P, which is how my whole family would know me unless I was in trouble, because I'm one of eight. And can you not sit still for 2 minutes? I can't ever picture my head. Well, I once tried yoga and I lasted about 30 seconds before I was told to get out, because I was laughing because people were bending over. So that'll tell you the childlike development part in my head.
Yoga is amazing. Go and try it again. Yoga is awesome. It's fantastic. We should all be doing yoga.
Not if the guy in front of you is wearing spandex and weighs about 24 stone, Ray.
Yeah, you see, you need to learn to focus on yourself and in those moments and what's going on with your body and your own spandex.
Well, no. One, I wasn't wearing spandex. I was wearing a pair of hurling shorts. Number two, the advice I actually got was you need to find yourself a new club where the people doing the yoga spandex thing are actually a hell of a lot better looking and not hairy men.
Good point, yeah.
It is a very good point, Ray. But if I can be mildly serious about it, from a garden design perspective, it's one thing to take the words that you have taken and you put them slightly at the top of the page. Two, it's another thing to make a design of a garden based on these. But there's also a point where the Joe public who does or doesn't ask those questions gets to walk past and say, I like that garden, or I don't like that garden. How do you think the public will react to this, whether, and let's assume just for argument's sake for the minute, they don't know what mindfulness and yoga and biophilia is?
It's a very good point. And I think whether or not they've read what the garden's about or know anything about it, I think if I want to achieve anything, it's that I create a space which is serene and peaceful and tranquil and inviting looking, and that has a sense of intrigue that makes you want to go and sit in it, and that it feels like a green space as well. That element of serenity kind of drawing you in, that's the most important thing for me. And I think that is probably the most key thing, because then you don't need to know about all these ideas, do you? You just need to know that that's somewhere you might like to go and sit for a moment.
I play Procol Harum, Whiter Shade of Pale, which starts off with a classical music tune. I'm open to correction, but I think it's one of Bach's numbers metamorphosized and turned into something a little bit more upbeat. And then I put on Aerosmith, the old school stuff, not the new sloppy movie stuff that you hear in the girly movies type thing. On a serious note here, but whether it's a slow paced or a fast paced, the point is that you walk past it, or you listen to it, or you, again, to use one of Peter's analogies, you see that lady on the far side of the bar, you're either endeared or attracted to that or you aren't. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, as a guy who's built show gardens, you open them up to the public, and I've had the greatest compliments ever in the world, and equally I've had grown men stand next to me and tell me I should be ashamed of myself.
That is the nature of show gardens, and you have to be willing to accept that. Some people are going to hate it and some people are going to absolutely love it, and that is going to be what happens. And I think you have to take that on the chin and know, stand by why you've done it, and know that you've done it in the way that you wanted to, and that the way that you felt it worked best. And hopefully you will make some people happy. But a reaction is a reaction. That's not to be forgotten. And it's with anything creative, you know, people will love it or hate it. And that reaction is why we do it, really, isn't it?
Well, yeah, to an extent, I think you put on your glad rags when you're 17 years of age and you thought John Travolta was the coolest thing since sliced bread, walking down the street with the pot of paint in his hand doing Saturday Night Fever, and you haven't got a hair in your chest and you're now 16 and you drop down a couple of buttons on the shirt and you look like a plank. But at the time, you feel like you were the coolest dude in the world.
Yeah.
And somebody along the way is going to turn around and say, do you know something? There's a guy with a little bit of swagger. And everybody else is going to turn around and say, there's an absolute moron. Who does he think he is? John Travolta? Like you said, you're right. You open yourself up and there's 25,000 or 100,000 people walk through the gates. 1 or 3% is going to turn around and say, I'm not a big fan of it. It's going to be an interesting journey, because in Chatsworth's case, it's still a young enough show. It's only 3 or 4 years old, Ray, I think.
This is the third year, I believe. If I've got that right in my head, this is the third year. Because the first year was when I actually was up there helping Butter Wakefield with her garden, and I thought, this is such a lovely place to have a show. And, you know, it was really enjoyable just being up there amongst the moorland, and, you know, a really lovely location in terms of the connection it's always had with art as well. So, I think it's still in the very early stages, and it'd be really interesting to see how it kind of where it goes from here, really, how it blossoms or which route it takes as a show.
The great Butter Wakefield, fellow Arsenal fan, I should add, and former guest of the East Side Show.
Lovely, lovely, lovely lady too.
She is absolutely wonderful. Funnily enough, I usually meet her in a pub nowadays for some reason or another.
Yes. Excellent. Good.
Unless I'm at Chelsea, in which case she's drinking Pimm's, and I have never tasted Pimm's to this day yet. Ray, is there anything else you want to get in that we haven't so far?
I mean, I'm really happy that we're relocating the garden to a very worthy cause. We've got a community interest group who are looking to recreate the garden in a slightly different format as a wellness space somewhere, possibly for bereaved men or something like that. They've got various ideas going on. But yeah. It's been great talking to you, Peter. Thank you.
Ray, it's been great talking to you as well. I think we phoned each other earlier on. I heard a woman not get too excited to hear my voice, and I said, well, that sounds familiar.
I'm so sorry. I had just walked in the door from a very long journey. It was nothing personal.
No, I'm well used to it at this stage of the game. Sherry Carmen reacts in exactly the same way, I should add.
Oh.
I'm joking. It's all good.
I'm sure. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Stay on the line with me, Ray, one sec. For those of you listening at home, I'm sure Tim Howell, Tim Howell X on Twitter, official photographer to the Sideshow, and most things that Peter Donegan does, having listened to the little people in his head once again. Hello, Howard. How are you? I hope you're doing good. We'll have photographs of all of Ray's previous gardens. And as soon as we get them, I'll pop them back out for you on the Sideshow Twitter account. In the meantime, Ray Wilkinson, it's been an absolute pleasure. Very best of luck with the sponsorship going forward and the garden to be at Chatsworth 2019. An absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you so much, Peter. Real pleasure talking to you too.
Indeed. For you listening at home, have a great week or weekend in the great outdoors, wherever you might be. Don't forget to hug your mother. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. God bless. Bye-bye. How was that, Ray?
Marvellous. Is that okay? Did you get what you needed? Was that okay? I'm standing shivering here in the dark now. Thank you, Peter.
Excellent, Ray. Thanks, Ray.
Thanks, Peter. Really lovely to talk to you.
You too. Have
See
a great
soon.
Evening. Bye-bye, bye-bye.
Bye-bye, bye. I'll be there.
I crawl, I can crawl.